Our four-season weather here in the Inland Northwest places extra demands on your roof. What might pass as a good roof in some cities just won't hold up around here. That's why you should hire Barton Roofing for your next roof. Free estimates, written proposals, a member of the Spokane Home Builders Association, and accredited by the Better Business Bureau. BartonRoof.com.
Spokane listens when business talks. Welcome to Business Talks, the region's only local business radio talk show with your host, Kent Adams.
And good morning,
Now, let's get
Spokane.
Down to business with Business Talks.
There's that other Inman we were talking about, and I stepped on him a little bit there. But it's a great day in Spokane as we record this program. You may be listening to it in the morning or afternoon or evening or late at night. What are you still doing up late at night? You should be reading a good book. But anyway, I'm real excited about today's program. We have two guests today, Mike Inman and Bob Davison. Did I say it right? Great folks, because the opportunity that's coming up here in a few weeks, Memorial Day weekend, is one that fascinates me because I love history. And Mike, you and I were talking about before we went on the air here about the history and what we wish we had maybe been a little smarter way back in high school and junior high and all of that. And now as we get a little bit older, more mature, we really love the history. But welcome, gentlemen, to our program this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's talk about, first of all, let's set the stage. What is this that's coming up on Memorial Day weekend?
Well, we have a Civil War reenactment. We have a full living history is the main thrust of what we do. We're doing the years of the American Civil War from 1861 to 65. This year we are actually concentrating on the years of 1865 towards the end of the Civil War.
Okay.
And we have full federal and Confederate camps set up. We have two battle schedules for Saturday and Sunday, where you can actually see the actual tactics and how they fought during the various battles. They're scheduled at 11 and 3 o'clock, and then on Monday at noon, followed by a memorial service because it is Memorial Day weekend.
Absolutely. When you say you set up camps, tell us what's involved in that.
Our camps are trying to get as period correct as possible. Where we're actually sleeping in canvas tents like they did back then.
So this isn't a thing that you go out to in the day and go home at night.
The reenactors
are there.
Yeah, we're there all weekend long. We're wearing the uniforms and the clothes. We have a very large civilian contingency that has their period camps like
sure.
The civilians lived.
Do you take away the cell phones?
Yes, although sometimes they're referred to as a wireless telegraph.
Oh, oh, give me a break. So that's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, well, anytime that we're around the public, we try to what we call defarb ourselves and go back into the 1860s and make it as realistic as possible. So if somebody had to use a telephone or had an ice chest or whatever, the public's probably not going to see it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's for after they leave at night and stuff too, right?
Yeah.
Sitting around the campfire.
Or they'll go hide in their tent.
So visitors, go look in the tents and see what's really
yeah.
happening. No. I was amazed, and Mike, I mentioned this to you when you came in a little earlier, how little history is really being taught in our schools. And what made me realize it was our intern from EWU, he's in his senior year right now, and he said, Civil War, tell me about it. And he remembers hearing about it for maybe an hour or two, maybe a day, but that was it. And yet it was so important to our country's history. What do you do that really takes it beyond the 1 hour in a classroom that unfortunately sometimes we spend learning about the
I refer to it as we de-Hollywood it.
Okay.
We take them back into the 1860s. They're going to see the uniforms. They're going to feel the uniforms. They're going to hear the cannons, the rifles, the muskets. They're going to smell the black powder. We're taking them back in that period of time. My portrayal, Bob does cavalry, so he knows a lot more about that than I do, but my portrayal is U.S. Medical. And so we'll actually do period-type amputations and surgeries, demonstrate him. All my instruments that I utilize are all original from the Civil War period. And we set up a field hospital, and we talked to him about what medicine was like. And Bob can talk more about – they talked to him about what the cavalry was like. They have infantry. We have civilians, ladies in hoop skirts, ladies in work dresses. So they kind of get a feel of – we try to take them back into the 1860s.
Yeah, and I like your term, you know, to de-Hollywood it, because we do have this impression, and oftentimes they get it wrong.
Yeah. Sometimes they try.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's ever happened to Bob.
I was trying to be kind, but yeah. You know.
I don't know if it's ever happened to Bob, but more than once I've been asked if I was actually a Civil War veteran. And I'll explain to him, you know, that happened back in the 1860s. 150 years ago it ended.
Yeah.
You know, so everybody that was associated with back, they're not around any longer.
I'll bet they're surprised, too. Because we do talk, you know, when we talk about the Civil War, there are certain names that come up, Grant and others, even Custer, in terms of what his learning there in the Civil War. And, of course, he went on to do his own thing. but it's I think we often refer and think of Lincoln at the closing of the Civil War and the Gettysburg Address. And that sometimes becomes the depth of what we know, which is, to me,
right,
a shame.
I think that's one of the things that I enjoy this hobby is because we are teaching public how they lived, what they did, why they were fighting. Being on the Confederate side, we may have just a little bit different look at it than Mike would because he's on the Union side.
Right.
And you know, so that's what we're teaching the public, things that they will never learn in school.
Yeah.
And they're not, like you mentioned before, they're not even being taught in school. And I think it's a critical part of our history that it formed who we were. You know, we over 680,000 men died during that period.
Well, didn't
of time.
We lose more Americans in that war than any other?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 2% of the entire population of the United States was killed in the Civil War of the 1860s.
And literally brothers against brothers and families and so forth. Mm-hmm. And what was the reason for the South to try to exit the Union and all of that? And I don't know that our young people today understand that.
Yeah, a lot of people look at the American Civil War and what happened back then, looking at it in 21st century mentality rather than 19th century mentality. Over 3 million Confederate and Union soldiers fought each other in that war for probably over 3 million different reasons.
Right. 3 million. That many.
Yeah.
You know, between I guess I had not heard that number, but wow. Well, and then, as I mentioned to you, some of my history and love for history is kind of on the West Coast here with a ghost town in Bodie, California, and so forth. And as I read that history, because that town really started to come alive in the 1860s, and the difference of the South and the Union and some of the questions being raised in town and so forth, even though the war essentially was, you know, 3,000 miles, 2,500 miles east, what that did to the dynamics of a gold town and all that went on.
There was no Civil War up here in the Northwest, but a lot of people were. In fact, you can go see the house that George Pickett, of Pickett's Charge in Gettysburg, lived in Bellingham. It's
really?
Still there. Yeah, a lot of the Civil War names were up here in the Northwest. Again, they didn't fight here, but there were troops up at Fort Colville, north of Spokane here, the 4th Infantry, that were sent back to fight in the Civil War.
What's the one thing that surprises people the most when they come out to watch this? What questions or what ahas do you get from visitors?
You mean you actually sleep in those tents?
You wear that wool when it's 70, 80 degrees outside?
And what kind of an air mattress do you have under it? Right. What were things like? What was the situation like back then? Because I don't think people today... Somebody gets hurt in the armed services and they're air-vaced out and everything else that goes on. In those days, it was totally different. They lived by a fire pit. They lived in a tent. They wore the same clothes forever. And all that went on, I mean, it was a very tough existence, wasn't it?
Yeah, and some of the things that I share really quick, and Bob can share too, but with the medical side of it, after the Battle of Gettysburg, 3 days, there was 150,000 soldiers in a town of 2,000 that devastated that town. At the end of that three-day battle, there's 50,000 casualties, 900 patients for every surgeon.
Oh, wow.
Grant lost 2,000 in 7 minutes at Cold Harbor.
Oh, wow.
24,000 in one day at Antietam. The numbers are just astronomical.
Yeah.
One of the things that I think people are amazed, especially when they actually watch the battles.
Yes.
Because they form up shoulder to shoulder. They march within, 50 to 100 yards of each other, and then they start firing like they did.
Right.
Because the tactics was back from Napoleon.
Yes.
Napoleonic tactics. And they're still using it because every general that fought on both sides of the war was taught at West Point.
Yes.
So they're using the same book.
Right.
And but the weaponry had advanced to such a huge degree that is why the casualties were so high.
Right. Yeah. They being 150 feet or so from each other, it was different with the modern,
rifles. Before the Civil War, the rifle was the musket. It was a smoothbore musket,
yes,
like a shotgun.
Right.
Accuracy was about 100 yards. After that, it just pretty much wherever it's going to go.
Right.
with the rifling, the rifles had accuracies out to 300, 400 yards.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So they're much more accurate. And then there was also the design of the mini ball from a French.
Claude Monet.
Yeah. Frenchman, trying not, to think, he was
not,
a dentist
not
or
the,
a,
not the painter Monet.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Really, might have been a cousin. I don't know.
But he designed a bullet that would work better in these rifled bullets, so you don't have to use a patched round ball like they had been using before.
Right.
That would expand out and improve the accuracy, and that was a very large bullet. I want to say around 350 to 400 grains.
Wow.
It was a huge amount of lead that was being thrown.
We're going to take a break, but before we do, because I want to do this a couple of times, remind folks how they can get tickets or what's involved to do that, and then we'll take a break and come back.
Sure. Just come on out to the site. We're out of Deep Creek Farms, just outside of the Air Force Base, and it's $10 for adults, and it's good for all weekend. $5 for kids, and all military is at $5 also.
Excellent. Outstanding. Well, we'll be back, and we'll be talking more with Bob and Mike about the Civil War enactment coming up on Memorial Day weekend. We'll be right back.
Listening to SpokaneTalksOnline.com, Spokane and North Idaho's business and community talk station.
Hi, this is Kent Adams, co-host of Business Talks. I'd like to introduce you to a couple of friends, Lisa and Alan Gwaltney of Window World. I've known Lisa and Alan for a number of years and know them to be honest and caring folks. They take pride in their windows, sliding doors, and blinds. So when it comes to your home, call them direct at 509-456-5880. That's Window World of Spokane and Coeur d'Alene. And if you tell them Kent sent me, they'll give you 5% off a 5-window installation. Call them today at 456-5880.
The economy is getting stronger, banks are lending again, and interest rates are at historic lows. Now is a great time to buy your dream home. The caring and knowledgeable professionals at Homes for You have been helping people just like you for over 20 years. They take the time to listen to what you want and will help you find just the right home in Washington or Idaho. Real estate is what we do at Homes for You, 928-5782, or visit online at homes4uspokane.com.
Well, welcome back. Kent Adams here with Business Talks, and a kind of a special opportunity today, and that's to talk about the Civil War at Deep Creek. It's the Civil War reenactment and living history presentation. It's Memorial Day weekend, which is May 23rd, 25th through the 25th at the Deep Creek Farms, and we've all driven by there on our way to Wenatchee or somewhere else out there on Highway 2. You pass Fairchild Air Force Base, and as you start to go down that hill, that's Deep Creek down there that we all see and wondered, what's that about? And so you turn and go north about, what, 2 miles?
Yeah. The address is 811 Deep Creek Road.
Because all the young folks are going to Google it, aren't they?
Yeah, and there's also a website. There's a website that's the Battle of Deep Creek. There's a website
Spokane Civil War.
Yeah,
.com.
Yeah, that'll get it. Yeah, both of those will get it there, and then it'll give a map of the layout. You know, the prices, the schedule, and everything.
What a great family opportunity for mom and dad to take the kids out. Really for all ages, I would assume, probably best for about age 5 and 6 and above, where they can really appreciate. But to go out and then to help answer questions of their kids, to come up to you gentlemen and others that are there and ask questions and see the reenactment and see the living conditions and everything else. You know, some of us are so visual. I mean, we are a visual society today. And yet I think back to the books, we would turn a page, and yes, we'd learn something and so forth. But this, you know, they're going to walk away with one of the best history lessons ever out there. Let me ask this question. What do you do, what have you done, you two, to learn about who you're representing? Because you probably have a name that you've taken on, mm-hmm. and the position and so forth. And Bob, what did you do to get to where you are that you feel comfortable enough to kind of be in that person's shoes? And who is it?
We all usually take on a persona of someone in the Civil War.
Okay.
And I took a member from the 14th Virginia Cavalry, who the unit that we represent.
Okay.
His name was Samuel H. Davis.
Okay.
He survived the war. He enlisted in 61 as infantry when it first started.
Right.
Once both sides realized after a few months that this is not going to be a 30-day war, that
yes.
they had to reorganize. And so in 62, April of 62, the Confederacy reorganized their arms and formed all the different units they have that we know about today. And the 14th Virginia was cavalry was a group of people from Roanoke, Montgomery counties,
okay.
Virginia. They were called the Border Rangers. They were a militia unit. All these different cavalry units were just militias
sure.
at the time. And they all formed multiple companies. There's a book on the 14th Virginia Cavalry, Company G, and they listed all the people in there. So I researched all the different people and who I kind of looked comfortable representing
sure.
and portraying. And then you do a lot more research, a lot of reading, far more history research than I ever did in school.
I'll bet, yes, yes.
But it is something that we've enjoyed doing for a long time. You've mentioned before it's a family organization,
yes.
family group. I've been doing this for about 15 years, and my whole family has been doing it. My wife and my two daughters grew up in the Civil War,
right.
reenacting.
Right.
They would dress up as troopers and ride their horses into battle with me, and then in the evening they'd
fun.
Put on their hoop skirts and
yes.
go through the camps and enjoy life on both ways.
Right. Do you feel when you're there that you really are that person?
A lot of people get in, yeah, a lot try to portray that.
Right.
A lot of people stay in first person. Many times when we're doing educational things, we had a school buses come out 1 year, and they had the list of questions the teacher wanted, and they would ask about, well, how did you keep your food safe? I says, well, we ate it.
Oh.
There was no refrigeration, you know, and then
That's
they said,
true.
Well, what about ice boxes? And I would say, ice what?
Ice, yeah.
You know, the plastic thing that you put ice in? I said, plastic? What's that?
Yes.
This girl thought I was the dumbest person in the world.
Yes, yes.
Because I had to understand what they were doing. But, you know, they have no concept of how it was.
No, that's so true. Mike?
Yeah, I portray a fictional person, excuse me, a fictional person that started with Burgess Western Sharpshooters and was with Grant at Fort Donelson when my medical skills, because I was a doctor in private life, in the 1860s, and you didn't have to go to school. I studied under a doctor.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up with the medical staff and finally ended up with the 1st Michigan Artillery. So I'm their regimental surgeon for the 1st Michigan Artillery.
Now, why did you go that route to make somebody up? Because there were certain things you were looking for and you wanted to portray that?
I started off with the medical because there wasn't a lot of people doing it.
Oh, okay.
And there wasn't a lot of information on it. Plus, I thought, you know, that might be a little bit cheaper. But, boy, when you start going out and buying original equipment, And still buying the rifles and the muskets, and I'm the proud, well, I'm one quarter owner in a Mountain Howitzer, so.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, so it was, that's the way I went with it. I didn't go with the real person. I had both of my great-great-grandfathers fought for the Confederacy, and I wear Union blue, so hopefully they're looking down favorably because I'm a non-combatant being a surgeon.
Ah, okay, okay. Before we started today, you gave me a bullet, which now I will treasure. Talk about that and the little history behind that.
Okay, that's the mini ball that Bob mentioned earlier.
Yes, yes.
And they started off with the round ball out of the muskets, and the mini ball went with the rifled rifles. And what it's kind of like throwing a spiral.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You can throw a spiral a lot further and a lot straighter than sometimes you can throw maybe a softball.
Right.
And so that's what that one, and it's from Fort Donelson.
Fort Donelson.
Which the Union commander at that one was Grant, U.S. Grant. Now, we do a lot of trivia at the event, too. Grant's actual name was Hiram Ulysses Grant. It wasn't Ulysses Simpson Grant. There's a whole story about that on the site and stuff, how he came up with U.S. And he kind of liked it, that U.S. Grant. And that's and after the Battle of Fort Donelson, where that came from on the Cumberland River in Tennessee, that's when he first used that unconditional surrender.
Uh-huh.
So the U.S. Grant became unconditional surrender Grant.
Oh, Lord. Well, you know what you've done for me now is that I'm going to have to go look up all that history. And you guys like doing that to people, don't you?
We do.
Yeah. I mean, isn't there a lot of satisfaction to that?
And we learn, because Bob was mentioning earlier, you do a lot of studying. I learn a lot from Bob.
Sure.
If I have cavalry questions, he's my go-to guy. And I go and I learn something from constantly about what the cavalry life was like. And, you know, again, the trivia, I ask kids that come in, I says, you ever been on rollerblades or you ever inline skates or anything like that? And they says, yeah. And I says, you know, they had those in the Civil War. They're called parlor shoes.
Okay.
So it's not something new.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was ice cream, but it was only the rich could afford it.
Right.
Because like Bob said, they didn't have refrigeration capability.
Or those plastic ice
buckets. Chest.
Ice chest. and how we measure as we're traveling between the McDonald's to get a Coke or an ice cream or something like that today.
Exactly.
And what it was like then. What did people eat then?
In the Army, I'll talk about the medical real fast. We ate very well.
I'm hoping you're not saying liver or something like that, because you know where I would go with that.
Yeah, we ate very well because we had the special dietary kitchen for the use of our soldiers.
Oh, okay.
Because in the Civil War, like Bob mentioned, almost 700,000, they think now it's close to 1 million died in the Civil War.
Mm.
But two-thirds of them died of disease. Only a third died of trauma.
Wow.
And the two-thirds that died of trauma died from what I did to them on the table. Because we didn't know anything about infection.
Well, you look at some of the movies and so forth. What's the one that Kevin Costner was in?
Dancing with Wolves?
And the beginning of that, where they're just chopping off legs and everything else. And it's kind of a cruel beginning, but that's probably fairly close to being accurate in terms of the time, didn't it?
Yeah. We saw 3.5 million patients in the Civil War, but we only did about 25,000 amputations.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I think there's the feeling, and I guess I had it, that every other person was, they lost a limb, but not true.
No, only if there was excessive infection or the bone was damaged, then we would.
Wow.
And with the cavalry, you know, what they ate.
Yeah, what did you put it? Horses?
Well, we tried not to, but towards the end, maybe. Actually, the Confederate cavalry did pretty well because they would be riding to different areas in the South, and so they'd go to friendly people, and then they would be fed by the local towns, local people quite often. You are usually, when you're going on a scouting mission or any kind of mission, you are usually given 3 days of rations for you and the horse. After that, you foraged. And everybody foraged.
Yes,
but being that we were usually in friendly territory, foraging, which means going out and gathering
and asking
food,
friends,
acquiring food, we like to use.
Oh, okay.
they would eat what they had. You know, everything was seasonal, of course.
Yes.
Because again, there was no refrigeration. Both armies had long wagon trains. You touched on something earlier that kind of sparked. A lot of people don't realize that you go down here to Fred Meyer's or grocery store and you need to think nothing of driving 10 minutes.
Yes.
Well, everything was by horseback or walking.
Yes.
You know, towns are typically no more than a half a day's a ride from each other.
Right.
It's as far as you're going to get in one day.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking 5 to 10 miles.
Wow.
And so people stayed together. One of the reasons the diseases were so bad in these camps, a lot of men died before they even got to battle because they had dysentery.
Right.
They were thrown in with people they had never seen before, never lived with before. So there's a lot of diseases, a lot of germs got passed around just, you know, because they weren't used to it.
Yeah, the vast majority of the soldiers had never been more than 10 miles from home in their entire life.
Sure.
And so their immune systems are very regionally mature,
right,
but globally immature. And so they caught diseases they'd never heard of before.
Right. It's kind of like when we moved west with the Indians and so forth, they're bringing whatever diseases and so
exactly,
forth.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. We're running out of time, darn it. Talk about the event and where it is and when it is and all of that so folks can go circle it on their calendar right
sure.
now.
This is the Battle of Deep Creek. You can do a Google search for it. It's at Deep Creek Farms out in Medical Lake, which is just past Air Force Base. It's Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. We're open from 9 in the morning to about 5 or later at night. We have two battles scheduled Saturday and Sunday from at 11 and 3, and then on Monday at noon, followed by a memorial service for all our veterans. The cost is $10 for adults, $5 for kids 17 and under, and all military gets in it for $5 also.
Outstanding.
And one thing new that we're doing this year that we haven't done in the past, and hopefully it comes off, is we have two gentlemen, one reenacts Lincoln and one reenacts Grant, actually going to give talks. And I haven't heard the gentleman that does Grant, but the one that does Lincoln is – he's phenomenal with his knowledge of Lincoln. He looks a little bit like him, but he's very, very good at his presentations.
Gentlemen, Mike Inman and Bob Davidson, thank you very much. I look forward to coming out and seeing it myself. I'll probably bring a grandchild or two. And so, again, thank you very much, and we'll have you back again next year.
Business Talks is produced in Spokane, Washington by SpokaneTalksOnline.com, which is solely responsible for its content. Ask a question, recommend a guest, and hear this program again online anytime at SpokaneTalksOnline.com. Business Talks wishes you good business and a good day.